This edition of Out There is from Tuesday, July 28th. The recorder wasn't working in the studio, so I'm reconstructing it at home. So on Friday, July 24th, I was in Boston for a container loading for Bikes Not Bombs. It was the first container loading they'd done since COVID. They were sending a shipping container of bikes to Rwanda to their partner project there. And when I was in Boston, I also was able to stop by the State House where people were doing an encampment for the last week or so to try to get the legislature to pass a bill that would allow anyone to get driver's licenses regardless of their immigration status, as long as they were of age and passed the test and all that. So I have an interview with Alicia, as well as a couple other guys who were there holding signs, maybe from the Pioneer Valley Workers Center or Driving Families Forward or Cosecha. I'm not sure which organizations they may have been connected with. The interview with the guys is in Spanish, and then Alicia's is more, it's in English and is kind of like a translation. Also, the feature interview is with Simbrit Paskins and Stephanie Maryshow, who are co-founders of 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active, which is a Facebook group started in June after a series of high-profile murders of Black people at the hands of police, including George Floyd. Thanks for listening to Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. And it originally aired on WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton, Massachusetts.
En Januario García.
Y
aquí me trajeron, me dieron ride para llegar aquí a participar con la licencia, que nos prueben las licencias. Estamos aquí para que todos manejemos sin miedo, porque esa es la meta de cada uno para todas las personas que necesitan una licencia sin manejar sin miedo. Si es que para todos estamos pidiendo una licencia.
¿Y el encampamiento cuándo empezó?
Empezó el viernes pasado.
Ok, entonces hace casi una semana que están aquí.
Una semana y media estar aquí ya.
Una semana y media. ¿Y usted ha estado aquí por todo este tiempo?
He estado dos días aquí participando con ellos.
¿Y usted?
Bueno, aquí estamos también apoyando a lo que son los compañeros, ya que uno por el trabajo también uno no puede estar aquí todos los días, pero aquí estamos apoyando a los demás.
Ajá. ¿Y qué tipo de trabajo hace cuando no está aquí?
Yo trabajo en una compañía de madera, soy operador de un molde y sí, pedí permiso para estar aquí el día de hoy.
Ajá.
Para luchar por la licencia, que lo necesitamos.
Ajá.
Y nosotros necesitamos esa licencia para manejar seguro y para que no tengamos ningún miedo en las calles.
Ajá.
A la hora de salir.
Ajá.
Buenas tardes, mi nombre es Carlos Chan y pues estamos aquí apoyando las causas por la licencia de conducir para manejar seguros y pues también perder un poco el miedo cuando vamos manejando a la hora de uno salir de la casa al trabajo o uno puede ir a algún otro lugar. Y entonces así con la licencia, si Dios lo permite, nos lo aprueban, ya manejaremos más tranquilo y pues también el Estado se beneficia en que se pagan más taxes.
Y si están manejando y el policía les detenga, entonces, ¿qué puede pasar?
Bueno, primero que nada, pues lo arrestan a la persona, segundo, le quitan el carro y tercero, pues lo mandan a corte y si es posible, el juez le da un chance de pagar el ticket o pues si no lo meten preso a uno, va a la cárcel uno.
¿Y qué pasa con sus familias?
Pues se quedan aquí desamparados de uno, que a veces uno es el sustento de la familia y eso es duro a veces.
Sí, también, Virginia. Hay muchos estados que están peleando por la licencia, que nos den la licencia, porque es un beneficio para el estado. Nosotros pagamos taxas, todo lo que está en la calle, y no tenemos derecho a tener un carro. Entonces sí exigimos a que nos den una licencia para todas nuestras familias, que nos tenemos que llevar a nuestros hijos a las escuelas. Es una necesidad, no es un lujo que nos queremos dar. Si puede tener un accidente, puede pasar algo, no tiene una licencia uno, ¿y cómo se va a respaldar uno? Entonces teniendo una licencia uno tiene más beneficios a que pueda un seguro registrar un carro.
Dime qué dice su letrero.
Dice, luchando, creando poder popular.
¿Y el tuyo?
Licencias ahora.
manejando sin miedo.
Manejando sin miedo.
Licencias para todos.
Licenses for all.
Alicia Cortez. I am here because we want driver licenses, the law to pass, and the bill to pass. And we're camping here. We've been here since Friday because we've been waiting 15 years for this to be able to pass.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but why is it taking so long?
I honestly think that they know that they will get more money out of us if they keep us without a license, because every time we get pulled over, we pay. Every time, not only that we go to court, but we also pay whenever for the tow truck, because they work together. Tow trucks and cops, they work together. You bring them to the same place. So then they know they're going to get more money out of us if they don't give us licenses, one. And two, it's somehow they keep us under fear, and they want us with fear. Because if they have us under fear, they know that they can take more away from us. And without with us, with that fear of being separated from our families, or getting pulled over, or going to jail, or feeling like we're criminals, they know that they can have us captured, like in captivity.
Has anyone that you're close to, experienced that? What's that like? What's that like when that happens? Can you talk about that?
Well, myself, right now, I got my documents, but it was a time that I didn't have my documents, and I was driving, and I had that fear, and I was driving with my children, and that is the worst experience ever in your life. It's like you don't have the ability to be able to say, let's go for a road trip, let's do this, have a normal life when you're with your children and you're driving. You feel like at any moment they're gonna pull you over, and then what's gonna happen if they pull you over? What's gonna happen to your children? How are they gonna feel about it? My thoughts was whenever I used to see a cop, I didn't want them to pull me over because I didn't want my kids to feel that I was in fear.
Yeah.
That my children were feeling threat by the cops. So that was my worst thing, and feeling embarrassed in front of my children. Having so many feelings, and it's just unexplainable and traumatizing the way we live. Because even now that I have documents, I'm always gonna feel undocumented. I don't care what happens. It's already in my veins. I'm always gonna feel undocumented.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, we were sharing last time here that every time we talk about our life, our emotions comes in, our sadness, our fear, our pain, our angry, everything comes into us. We just cannot forget. And every time we talk about it, it's like, how can I get healed if I still keep looking at it? And how can I heal if I'm still surrounded by it? And how can I heal if they don't want to understand that it's painful? Mm-hmm. And it's hard. It's just not a nice thing.
Yeah. Have you found some allies in the state house?
We have found people that says that they are with us inside in the state house, saying that yes, we agree. But it's like, come on, it's gonna be the 31st next week. Uh-huh. If they really wanted it, then why not push it before? Then why put us through this? If they're saying that yes, they were with us, then why are we here in the middle of COVID, in the middle of a racial moment, in the middle of everything? Why are we still here? Why, if they say that they're with us, then how come they're putting us through this? You know, exactly, like, why are you taking forever to do something and to pass something? So, yes, they say that they're with us, but words are not actions. Uh-huh. Actions are what we need. Uh-huh. We're done with words.
Do you know how many more sponsors, do you need like more co-sponsors of the bill, or do you know where that's at?
like I know, but in my own words, but I don't know how to explain it, but I know that we had an amendment and that we needed a certain signatures to be able to pass, and we did that. So it's fine, but we just need now their signature for them because we had the amendment and passed. So it's like now we're waiting for them to sign our paper and say yes or no.
Are you hopeful?
Honestly, it's, I don't, I hope so, but they're passing by here and they're watching us here and they just don't even have the courtesy to look at our eyes. They just don't have the courtesy of anything. Mm-hmm. They just pass by like we're nothing. Mm-hmm. That just tells me like they don't care. Mm-hmm. So I know that I don't know what to expect from them. I know that we are going to fight and we're going to go and we're going to stay and we're going to do whatever it takes because it's not just a license. This is more than a license. It's family. It's protection. It's feeling somehow free. It's getting out of that captivity. It's so much going on. It's a family. It's love. It's work. Stability. It's not just a license. A license for anybody here that has it. It's not for us. It's more than that. It's love. And so, from what I know is that we're gonna fight no matter what.
I'm here with Simbert Paskins and Stephanie Mary Show, co-founders of 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active. Thanks for coming out today, y'all.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're here in the Mill Park in East Hampton behind the Eastworks building.
Mm-hmm.
It is. We're doing this interview on Monday, July
27th.
Monday, July 27th, 2020. Thanks. Well, maybe we can just start by, you all can share what is 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active, and how did it come to be?
Yeah. So I think we can probably tag team this one because that's usually how it works best. So 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active initially was made into a Facebook group. The intention was to create a place before the Holyoke Mass Black Lives Matter March, was to create a place to where we could funnel anyone who felt activated or inspired to like push forward in the work of like liberating Black lives. So whether it was direct action and they wanted to continue protesting and rallying, or whether they wanted to be like the ones writing letters and making phone calls, like anyone who wanted to do something, we wanted to funnel them into one place so that we could communicate like what the next steps would be within our 413 communities. So the night before the Holyoke March, we were kind of just getting ready to go to bed after a really long like prep day, and we were like, let's just make this Facebook group. And we kind of anticipated that maybe like, I remember telling Steph, I'm like, maybe like 300 people will probably join the group and it'll be really cool. And then we can like all work on these projects and it'll be amazing. And then after the Holyoke March, it was like automatically at almost 2,000 people.
Wow.
And so that was really inspiring, one, because it was kind of like, it was inspiring to see how many people were just ready to go and fired up, and you need that people power. But then as the weeks grew by, the numbers grew. And so 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active, the Facebook group that was supposed to be a kind of like a working and a learning and a planning place, shifted into more strategic kind of thinking. And I think like Steph can probably speak to the, like what we're looking for it to grow towards now.
Okay, yeah. So we started it, we were just like, oh, let's have a place for everybody to come so we can just talk and like plan moving forward. And then we're like, okay, people really, really want to move forward. Like, this is awesome. So currently, like, we just really want to try to like leverage the skill and like the people who want to be active in the group. So it's like, you know, at the end of our marches, Simbert always says, there's a place for you. Like, if you work in, you know, healthcare, there's a place for you. If you're, you know, in law, there's a place for you. If you're in politics, if you're in, you know, food justice. Like, so we want to, like, try to, like, get people in the group to, like, become these, like, little, like, cool little, like, sections that they can, like, start to work in the community and start to help our, what is our, what is our mission? To end systemic racism by mitigating the effects, mitigate the effects of systemic racism by empowering Black people with, and people of color through education. And so we want to start, I guess like groups within the 413 Swissa group that we can start to do trainings and workshops and start to give these skills to the community and to people of color that don't have access to those kind of things. And kind of just move forward and make this a really sustainable change. Like, you know, protesting and everything is like beautiful and necessary. But in order for this to really change and to really sink in and get it at the root, we have to start training people and giving them the skills or like pulling the skills out. So this group is kind of transferring into like this like physical, like solid solution to end racism in the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So nothing big or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With several thousand people on the list or being involved, like how do you juggle these things? Like you're also a teacher at Holyoke High School, right?
Yeah.
And you all have, you both have other jobs.
Yeah.
How do you balance these?
Well, I would honestly say that we are still learning how to balance, because for me, and I think for Steph, like it's really hard to separate. So when we go into our jobs, like, you know, with ServiceNet or with Holyoke High, like we don't stop being Black. And so the experience around like racism never ends. It's actually a part of who we are. And that's why I think there's sometimes strife within our own communities, because it's like such a part of who we are, where like certain things are internalized, that it makes it hard to step out of that. So in the same way, like if I have to go to a meeting as Miss Sim, the teacher, it's hard for me to not think about the action that's happening that afternoon, because that is like speaking out to a part of myself that like I need to, I kind of need to like address. And so I think like it's hard to separate being an organizer in this work and these, we get to have these amazing conversations, like meeting people like you and other people who have just been thinking about how do we all collectively come together as a community to like affect systemic change. It's hard to separate that from like our work stuff. And so I think part of it is that like we tend to like cross the line. So we tend to like integrate pieces of the organizing work that we do well into our work. Like Steph has talked about the ways that she interacts with her clients, and even with her supervisors, to where a lot of the time it seems like her supervisors are like looking up to her. And I do the same with my students and like with my coworkers. And so while we're doing the organizing, you know, another protest, we're also organizing an anti-racist, you know, cohort within the school to look at curriculum and that sort of thing. But the balance is really, really hard, because nowhere in all of that did you hear me say self-care. And then, like, that's a piece that I think we're working on huge. So yeah, that was just my first initial thought. How are we balancing?
Yeah. I think we're learning how important it is to balance. So that's like a really good step. I'm not sure if we have that, we have it yet. But we have been trying to work in time for us just to like turn off and like like really just be like, okay, like I have doctor's appointments for myself that I need to like do, and like, you know, but it's so hard to think about anything else. It really is, because in the middle of everything you're just like, but Black Lives Matter, and we have to end systemic racism, and you know, so we're working really hard to like come up with schedules that work, that get our personal jobs in, our organizing, which is kind of like a 24/7 thing, but like to where they all work together in like our self-care schedule. So yeah, I think it really just, we're in the process of making it work, for sure. But I think awareness is like the first step, and just being aware of the fact that we need balance. So that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, balance and boundaries. And also like, I think one of the things that really has, like, it really, I felt a difference between last week and the weeks before, was that, like, you can't pour from an empty cup. So we spent a lot of time last week just sitting with mentors and people that we trust to kind of help and guide us and want nothing from us and have nothing to gain from helping us. They just care about us as people. And so they were, like, having those conversations and getting that advice and having those thought partners kind of, like, fed us. And then we have enough energy to feed kind of like along the way at every march and things that we've done, we've met these amazing people. People who are phenomenal speakers, people who are phenomenal organizers, who think outside the box, and like they've become our team and like help us get things done with little to no time in between. Like we could call them today and be like, something's going down tomorrow, what do you got? And like we would have a whole production. And so these amazing people have become our team, and we wanna look to see how like we can train and sort of guide them. So then essentially, you know, when someone says, can 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active help us plan this action, it doesn't have to be just Steph and I. Mm-hmm. So it's like looking at how things can be delegated and sort of spread the leadership this way instead of like up and down, so that you have all these pockets of people who are empowered to like go out and replicate what, you know, people have been seeing us do. Because at the end of the day, like, it's so much not about us. Yeah. It's so much about every other brown person and like all of us together. Mm-hmm. Like if we don't all win, then none of us win. Yeah. And so it's definitely a work in progress, but I think like that's one of the things that help us stay focused, is knowing like it's just bigger than us. So
yeah, we were talking yesterday to one of our mentors, and she was saying how, like, she was saying how we want this to be sustainable. Like, that's what we want this to be. I want this to not just, I don't want it to dwindle away, and I don't want it to, like, fizzle out. We want this to be a forever thing. So, but in order for it to be sustainable, we have to be full. And that whole idea of, like, you can't pour from an empty cup. So that whole idea of, like, you can't pour from an empty cup, and so I lost my train of thought.
That you have to be full and you want to be sustainable. What Judy was saying.
Yeah. So Judy, yep, Judy did say that. So yeah, I think, and then that ties into what Simbert was saying about being able to. So we want to like empower people to like find the leader within themselves that's already there, so that, and understand that like me and Simbert are like, you know. Yes, we're doing this, but like everybody else can do it too. Like there's so many people who can do exactly what we're doing, but they just need like that nudge. They just need like, you know, their voices to be lifted and need someone to just like, you know, maybe get them started. So that's what we want to do, and that's how you make it sustainable. When it's not just, you know, when it's a whole community of people that can go out and do a protest and go out and do a workshop and do all those things, that's how you make it bigger than you, and that's how you make it sustainable. Right. So.
There's even like, and this is such a random thought, but like, I was just on social media and I saw the, what did they wear? The green hats, the field observers, the legal observers, and for like actions and stuff. And they were black. They were black legal observers. Mm-hmm. And up till now, with all of the actions we've done, all of the legal observers have been white. And like one non-black person of color that I can remember, she's awesome. Mm-hmm. And so even like thinking down to that level of thinking, like what is the difference between where like white folks have had the time or the access or the availability to take the training and to get the green hat and to show up for these things, but people of color and black folks like haven't. It's not because we're not capable or smart enough. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at what are the barriers and how can 413 SWISSA like work to remove those barriers so that our people essentially can like stand on the same playing field, really. Mm-hmm. I would love to see, you know, field observers of color at these actions, and also understanding like the level of safety and things is totally different for a white field observer or legal observer rather, than a person of color who's a legal observer, but still, like, I would like that to be an option. And so that's just like a snapshot into the way that like we're looking to build from here.
I'm glad you shared that. Just like, it gives me chills. Be like, yeah, and that, like, that'd be so awesome.
Crazy,
to have
right?
more black legal observers. And stuff. I was gonna ask you, like, what do you see as some of the challenges that people have to face to feel empowered or to be empowered to do some of the kind of work that you two are doing right now? You mentioned like people just don't have the time. You know, they're busy, families, meeting daily needs.
There's so much.
There's so much.
There's like, because there's levels. There's levels to it. I think one of the first things that come to mind is like, someone asked us the other day, how do they get more people of color to join boards within our community? And the first thing we said was pay them. You know what I mean? Like, you're asking people who have been like generationally oppressed, like monetarily, physically, like mentally, emotionally, all those things, to like give up time at our jobs that's paying us, that's sustaining our families and like our livelihood,
that we're to do a good thing.
Yeah, that we're already making less at, to do a good thing. Like everybody, most people want to do the good thing. They want to be on the board. They want to help with the nonprofit, da 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 da. But when you have like responsibilities and you're already like have been set back, I think like that's a huge thing. So one barrier is like paying people. And I've heard the past week as we've been talking to other folks who are planning things say that they want to offer like not stipends, but they want to be able to just pay folks of color who speak on the mic or share their experiences. Like, and it's not like a hand me out or anything. It's like pay them because like, we've been, you know, kind of living this. I think another huge real barrier is just like people of color not wanting to face like the trauma that you can be like inundated with at an action. So for a lot of us, it's like we've been sharing our stories with people. We've been talking about how that was racist and that experience wasn't fair and that person got harassed by the cops and nobody cared.
And it feels like nobody listens.
Right.
And it's just like, what's the point? What's the point of sharing this? Mm-hmm. If nothing's changed, we've been fighting for 400 years and everybody knows the stories. And, you know, so it's kind of like a lot of people are really discouraged. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you picked up where I was leaving off.
So, yeah, a lot of people are discouraged. So, you have one. It's hard to go and be on a board or be in a situation where you want to make change if you have kids at home and you're working two jobs. And, you know, I mean, just being black already and, like, fighting for like something, for a stake in a country that you've built, that's stress enough. Then yes, there's like just trauma in general, and then there's a lot of, you know, being discouraged. And then there's like, okay, all the great amazing workshops and leadership trainings and all this stuff are in really, really white neighborhoods.
Right.
And many black people don't feel comfortable around white people, like, just let's be really honest. You know, I've grown up in East Hampton and I've had a lot of exposure to all types of people. And even still, I can still feel very uncomfortable sometimes walking into an all-white room. Mm-hmm. So there are many black people that want to go to these trainings, want to go to these workshops, want to grow professionally, but they don't feel like there's a place for them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the funding and stuff that's going to these things aren't going to black neighborhoods and aren't run by black people.
Yeah.
And so there's that. There's like this, like, you know, loss of hope that like people just kind of, they try and they try, they get nowhere, so then they stop trying. And when America already looks at you and thinks that you're lazy already, you know, it's kind of like, well, you can't, you know, well, I might as well be. Or like, you know what I mean? There's so many different reasons.
I was thinking about how like, you know, also this idea of like elitism and like if you don't have a degree, then I mean, that's what I'm seeing unfold now, that all of these institutions really want to put a label on their website or on their school to say like, we are anti-racist and we're doing anti-racist work. That is the moment right now for a lot of institutions, whereas it's a movement for our people. And so like, if you don't have a degree or a certification or something that says that you qualify to teach an anti-racism workshop, then you're not getting paid the minimum $1,000 like speaker consultation rate to go like work with a group of people who really need to dig into some anti-racism work. But I know tons of people like from our communities who never went to college because they didn't need to, because we lived this, who could speak to it in a more powerful way, in a way that would give people more tangible steps instead of just a certificate. Like, there's so many people out there like that. And so like, that's just a huge conversation we've been having as far as where 413 SWISSA is looking to go. Like, I want to pull these people in and I want to pay them like the experts that they are to be able to go back out into our communities and beyond to teach and to educate and to hopefully like change it, you know?
Yeah, because there's like a lack of confidence as well. So yeah, like a lot of people just like have, you know, either low self-esteem or low self-confidence as well. If you're constantly told that the way you speak isn't proper and, you know, your slang is not proper for this area, but this is all you know, you could be a college graduate with master's and whatever else, but if you don't speak a certain way, if you don't dress a certain way, if you don't look a certain way, white, you don't get taken seriously. So it's... there's so many other things, but yeah, like just a lack of self-confidence, like, you know what, I know I can do this, but because I don't have the experience, because he wouldn't give me a chance, now I have this degree for nothing. Like, you know, a lot of people, like, honestly, it's like, why try, you know what I mean? Or I'm gonna keep trying, and again, it's like, that's not for us. Mm-hmm. I always tell the story, like, one of my things that, like, pushed me forward so much in my passion and what I do to help the community is when I play the guitar, and I went to go teach at a school, and a middle schooler I was working with in Springfield, he, like, looked at me, and he was like, I've never seen a guitar in real life. Like, I didn't know people like us could do that. Like, I didn't know people like us played the guitar. Like how did you? And then he's like, oh, but you're from, like, East Hampton. You're, like, from a white neighborhood, so. But, like, that broke my heart, because, like, why is he so shocked to see a guitar? And why wouldn't that be for us? So it's just about access, and it's about bringing it to them. If nobody's gonna bring it to them, like, we're gonna bring it to them. Man, we can go on forever, but
yeah. I was just thinking about on NPR news this morning, they talked about the Kerner Commission, which came out after the riots of 1967, I think, and you know, the government funded all this big study, and the conclusions of the study was that lots of the social unrest was caused because white people are racist and black people are oppressed.
We're like, no way.
Really?
Who knew?
How much money did you spend on the study?
Right.
Yeah,
it's nuts.
And so, like, I feel like now, like, the police review commissions or all these things, it's sort of like, all right, we need another Kerner Commission because we have no idea what's going on.
Right. A lot of that is totally for show. I mean, all of it is for show. Like, and I'm a firm believer that, like, in this movement, you need people looking at this thing from all angles, and you need people attacking it from all angles. We had seen on Facebook posts, and it basically was saying we, as people trying to, like, dismantle systemic racism, need to think and strategize as radically as the people who think and strategize to, like, keep it where it is.
Right.
So that being the case, like, the police commission, not the police commissions, the civilian review boards, the murals that are being painted, and the folks who are doing surfacey anti-racism work, those are all beautiful symbols of progress. But if in 1 month our kids go back to school in communities of color like Springfield and Holyoke, and they're already entering back into a system that is disproportionately, like, serving them, and then we get infected with coronavirus, like, at higher rates and disproportionately die, then the murals and the police review, civilian review boards, and the surfacey anti-racism workshops do nothing. They don't serve us. They just sounded good on paper for the 2020 year. Like, as a highlight, like, look what we did.
Yeah.
And so that's where, like, this month to me, moving into August, feels like strategy month, because winter's coming. That makes it harder for people to access food. Like, a lot of parents are choosing to keep their students home. I was reading an email this morning, and they should. But what does that look like when you have more than one kid at home at varying ages, and you only have one computer, and they all are supposed to have 5 to 7 classes a day electronically with bad internet? Like, what are the things that we're looking to do? And all of the people who are showing up to these marches, and all of the people who are donating their money, and, like, really, God bless them, because we can't do half the things that we're doing in order to, without, like, funds. But, like, I need them in a month or so, when, like, the warm weather goes away and the hype kind of comes down, to still show up in the same way, with the same amount of energy, with the same amount of, like, I'm ready to go, tell me what you need, with the same level of understanding that you need to follow the lead of people of color in this work. Or else, you know, we'll just see that it was all for show. And so it's kind of like the proof is in the pudding kind of thing. That was intense, but it just is so real.
Yeah, it is.
it feels like a clock is, like, ticking, you know. Not that anything can be fixed in a month. It's not like we're going to eradicate systemic racism in a month. But that's when you're going to really start to see, like, who's ready to, like, dig in and do this work. Yeah. And that's kind of scary, because, I don't know, performative, you know, activism is a real thing. So,
Can you just give a plug for the Facebook, like, if people want to get involved, want to donate, how can they find out more or donate?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
So, yes, our Facebook group is 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active. And I'll say it again. It's 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active. You go on Facebook, you type that name in, you'll see the group, and then we are only accepting people who answer all of the questions because we got some people in there that weren't supposed to be in there and they were causing some trouble. So we're just trying to be, we're trying to be a little more careful for the safety of our group members and everyone else. It's 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active. If you want to donate, if you have questions about donations, you can always email us at 413staywokestayactive@gmail.com. Donating currently, we have a GoFundMe up. Again, you can just type in 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active on GoFundMe.com. And we are accepting Venmo, Cash App, and PayPal through my personal Venmo, Cash App, and PayPal until we can set up an account that's just for 413 Swissa. That's what we're calling it. So I don't keep saying Stay Woke, Stay Active. My personal Cash App is, what is it? Steffy127. That's STEPHY 127. Venmo is SMaryShow27@gmail. That's my email for Venmo. And I need to spell Mary Show, I'm sure. SMARRYSHOW27@gmail.com. And PayPal is SMaryShow. SMaryShow127@gmail.com. And yes, there's that, and then there's the GoFundMe. And we do have a website. It's currently under construction, but it's also 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active. Whenever you want us, just type in 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active somewhere and we will be there.
Yes. We try to keep it simple, like none of this should be out of reach. Mm-hmm. So just keep it simple.
Yeah.
Exactly. So can I ask you about school?
Sure.
What's happening with school starting again or not? How's Corona affecting you, your classes, your students?
Yeah. What I know is that there are schools right now have this week to submit their school improvement plans, which should accommodate the CDC's school adjusted guidelines for COVID safety. For example, the regular CDC guidelines say that we should all be 6 feet apart. The school adjusted guidelines say that we can be 3 feet apart. And so with schools wanting, because of these quote unquote experts in the field, I say quote unquote because if they were, they wouldn't make these recommendations, but these quote unquote experts in the field, they are, schools are wanting, most schools, especially in Massachusetts, are wanting for all of the students, as many students as possible, to be back in the building. So they are trying to accommodate those student bodies with 3 feet distances in between. Our classrooms are not big enough. So our classroom, the space itself, with the number of students that we have in a class block, are not big enough to hold all those students at 3 feet, let alone 6 feet. And so they are looking at the different spaces in the school that used to be recreational to see how they can make those classrooms. So those would be like the student safe spaces. It would be like the gym. I'm trying to think, maybe even some teacher's lounges. Uh-huh. I can imagine. So when schools shut down in March, Steph kind of like saw the level of stress that like my workload went to because nobody was prepared. And we immediately started thinking around classes outside. We saw that other places were like thinking about that plan in March. Here in Massachusetts, I haven't seen that there's a school that's looking at that option, let alone Springfield and Holyoke. I think at least while the weather's warm, why not? Especially for the high schoolers. They would love that, to just be like outside like this and like learning, or sitting in the grass in a circle like X amount of feet apart. I think they would love that. But I don't think Holyoke has not made any announcement about it. I haven't heard anything from Springfield. Yes, the guidelines are relaxed. The teachers, I was reading something this morning, so, you know, when a student needs help with something and you've got to kind of like go close to their desk and kneel down and kind of assist them one-on-one, that will be next to impossible. Yeah. I've seen that some schools are recommending that teachers do a hand signal that says, I'm hugging you, for the littles who need, like, consolation, as if that would ever stop a kindergartner from throwing a fit. And so, realistically, like, from my perspective right now, the guidelines are, they're not realistic. Schools are prepping for three options, that we either go full service, everyone goes back, we go hybrid, so some students show up on one day, the other students show up on another day, and when they're not in school, they're remote learning from home on the computer. For that option, I'm wondering about technology, like, are funds going to be deployed so that we can have cameras in the classroom? Are teachers going to have to set that up themselves? What time from the learning time is that going to take away trying to set up? There's so many facets. Also, like, high schoolers, you know, the joke, I always tell the joke that my high schoolers are taller than me, but I love them and they love me, but who am I to tell a high schooler not to go talk to their friend and to be, like, 6 feet apart? And then what, if they don't listen to me, they're going to get what, disciplined?
Yeah.
You know, like, it just, I could see a lot of these restrictions snowballing into bigger things. High schoolers are not like little kids. You have to earn their respect. You don't just, like, say to do something and they do it, and you shouldn't expect so as an educator. So, so, you know, as far as how do teachers get prepared for moving into the fall, you either prepare for all three options, which is double, triple work, which is, like, really hard to even think about where to start, or you wait until our teacher PDs start, which will be a week and a half or so before the first day of school, which is not nearly enough time to prepare a year's worth of in-person curriculum and transfer it to something that could be hybrid or online. And so I'd say it wasn't a really pretty picture from the people who have taught in classrooms before. This only sounds good to people making these rules and decisions. I know that teachers in Florida have been striking. I know that teachers in other places have been striking. And I'm curious, I actually woke up this morning thinking, curious about what the outcomes of those strikes have been. Because, again, like, the last thing that we think about is, like, self-care. So only recently have I started to think about what, you know, how much does my risk increase to contract coronavirus by being in a school building with circulating air. Also, that's the other thing. Some schools are turning off their air, like the AC and stuff, so that they can have the windows open, so that the... So just, like, imagine, it's just hot, and you're... When I've gone to the mall once, because when I wear a mask too long, I get a headache, and I get, like, dizzy, and it's just not good. So I'm expected to do that for 8 hours a day with students rotating in and out with no air, just and expect for tensions not to be high and attitude. Now, I get an attitude when I'm too hot and uncomfortable. So it's actually really scary. I feel mostly fear moving into the school year. I don't feel excitement. I will say that our ethnic studies students and students who have been engaged in, like, diverse education and anti-racist, anti-colonialist education, where the student is at the center of all that stuff, they will have a better shot going back. I strongly believe so, because they've been connected to the work in a way that's, like, really real for them. And so they're, like, ready to keep learning and keep engaging in whatever means necessary. That's what we saw when schools closed down in March, was our ethnic studies students were more engaged because they were engaged with us as, like, the adults in the space. So they may, they may, like, re-engage easier, but it's still going to be tough. It's still going to be tough, so that's what I know about school.
Yeah, do you have thoughts on how the new systems and regulations related to coronavirus, how they'll impact schools in, like, Holyoke and Springfield schools with mostly students of color and poor schools, how they'll impact them as compared to, like, Northampton or wealthier schools?
Yeah, I mean, schools? I think... So, like, Holyoke Public Schools and Springfield Public Schools, from what I have seen, are already at a disadvantage. There's already been teacher shortages. Like, we, like, for so long, those two school districts have not had enough teachers within the building to serve the needs of the students, have not had enough occupational therapists, have not had enough guidance counselors, have had way more than enough cops and resource officers and disciplinarians, but none of the other things that serve the needs of, like, our children while they're in school with us for 8 hours a day, and then beyond if they do, like, extracurricular or sports or that sort of thing. So we've already been at a disadvantage with that. What we've seen with COVID is that a lot of teachers are no longer working, so there have been teachers who have resigned. Schools inevitably have a lot of teachers who are older, above the age of 55. And they are immunocompromised in regards to COVID, so the realities of them being able to teach in person are slim to none. Mm-hmm. And the realities of them teaching virtually is very, very difficult. Yeah. Like, I am 26 and I had trouble shifting to remote learning and just like the different technological tools that we had at our disposal. So I can't imagine. So that's a huge gap. So there's a teacher shortage. And that's why the Department of Education offered these emergency licensures. They were like, oh my gosh, we're not going to have enough teachers for the fall. Anyone who applies basically could get one. Mm-hmm. That's terrifying. It's terrifying that that information in itself wasn't enough to like keep the school from stalling, reopening, or from coming up with a different plan. So now who knows who has these licensures, honestly. And then for Springfield and Holyoke, I mean, I'm thinking about like food services, and our students typically get like crappy food anyway. Springfield did a really cool thing where it might have just been the elementary schools, but basically they were getting food only locally sourced, and it was being like packaged like the day before, like the day of, and they would get it, and it was just like all fresh food. And I like watched my kindergartners like look at like fresh tomatoes and like fresh cucumbers and like love it, and it was really, really cool. Mm-hmm. And so they were getting that for their snack time and for their lunch, but with the dangers around COVID now, I wonder how much of that has to be shifted. Mm-hmm. There's no social interaction that will be allowed in schools, and that is the main reason why people are saying students need to be back in schools. Huh. But there will be no social interaction.
Depressed already.
Yeah, there will be no sharing. I don't know how little ones are going to learn how to share anything.
Right, they're going to be told not to.
There will be no manipulatives, so hands-on learning and project-based learning without funding, so that each kid can have their own thing. That's not going to happen. I think about, again, the multitude of parents that are wanting to keep their kids home. And so if the schools don't receive funding, which they already weren't receiving funding, or maybe they were and it wasn't being used properly, but so the kids who are at home, will they get the same manipulatives? Will they get the same equal or equitable chance to learn? Likely not. In Holyoke, from what I know, each household was getting a computer, and that was based on the emergency of having to close down schools. I would need to see, like, each student in the house needs their own device, so that they can separately like do what they need to do when it's time to do it. The school district last quarter did a pass-fail system instead of like numbers and that sort of thing, which gave all of our students a greater chance at passing. So it's like we also found these systems that really worked, that I wonder like why they're not going to try to keep them for the new school year. But Springfield, most of our schools are failing. They're at like a level 4. So the language is different from Springfield to Holyoke, but they're at like a level 4 failing schools. Holyoke High, and the district is in receivership. And so that means that we had big academic problems before COVID hit, for the schools to be like failing. And so, and part of that was like not having funding to pay enough staff to be in the building to support the needs, so that we would not be failing anymore, or would not need to be in receivership by the state. And so I hate to be like super negative, but it just seems like it's all going to be harder if the state doesn't consider those facts as like valuable pieces of information and then plan accordingly. Right now it seems like the state is like planning, they're acting as if these like disenfranchisements didn't exist. And so they're like, parents will make the best choice for their kids, and then it'll all be great, without like considering, are they getting the same amount of resources? They're trying to cut unemployment right now. Like, parents will have no income.
That was Simbrit Paskins and Stephanie Mary Show, co-founders of 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active Facebook group. Thanks for listening to Out There Today, or rather the recorded version. The next episode is a continuation of the interview, but it got partially recorded, so there's some songs mixed in with that one. Oh, I think I also mentioned on the beginning of the real show that I would be ending Out There at the end of August, because I'm planning on shipping bikes to Trinidad on Labor Day weekend, and then hopefully going to Kentucky after that, if COVID travel plans allow. Ciao.